Hello, good afternoon. My name is Cooper, as Lucas said. I have a very thick Australian accent, so I will try and speak slow, but as I get excited and I speed up, just yell out, slow down. I do that often. So who am I? I'm Cooper Lees. I've been at Meta for a very long time, since 2013. There's many ex-co-workers here and co-workers here. I've been all over infra. The first team, I started sort of firefighting and keeping our website up at all costs. In 2013, Meta was a very different company. It was alarm fighting at its finest. I sort of spent some time in network. I've been in our sort of Python Foundation team, and now I'm sort of in our operating systems provisioning team. So getting the OS onto our servers as quick as we can so that we can re-image our servers more often, and there's a number of reasons we do that. I'm currently in Chicago, Illinois. I used to be in California for years, but I've escaped California, so living there. So what do I do? I kind of said, I joined the sort of provisioning team about 2 years ago, and the goal was we wanted to be A, more reliable because we were failing and retrying too much, and we wanted to do it faster. Why fast? We want to try and make sure in a 3-month window that every server in our fleet has been revisited. Doing that for millions of servers, quite a job. And we do it. I'm happy to say that we do that. So I'm going to go into why do we monitor PID1? What made me do this? There was previous talks from my coworker Davide about this, and we have got there. I'm going to go over again how we use and where we use systemd again at Meta. It's been told before, but I'll go over it pretty quickly just so you know. It has changed a little bit since previous talks. Then I'm going to talk about how we do monitor systemd and why, and then go into sort of how I've open sourced it. So you too will be able to sort of monitor your systemd if you would like to. I'm going to allude to some of my home boxes. So I just wanted to show my extremely overly complicated home network. When you take a network guy out of a network sort of team, I get bored. So at home, I have far too many internet connections and home routers, and it's all network D powered, thus my network D question before. I'm a big fan and I want to see Linux unified and all the V6 work that you've done lately, awesome. I'm also an IPv6 zealot. I worked a lot on the V6 stuff at Meta. So over drinks, happy to talk about it. The main two boxes you're going to see in my example is my home one router and my home two router. And I also want to say all my VPN is driven by WireGuard and NetworkD. Awesome extraction, love it. So what do we care about monitoring PID1? Systemd just works, it never breaks. And it's, for the most part, pretty true. Systemd itself very rarely screws up unless you're doing crazy things on embedded systems and forgetting to include things at once. Luckily, in my world, I'm a CentOS distribution, and for the most part, we have everything we need. That's not completely true in our innetrds. We sort of skim and pull parts that we want to make our innetrd smaller, so all firmwares are happy, because some firmwares are upset if your innetrd is too big. So there we have run into the fun, we're missing this, missing that. So those better logging messages would be awesome. So systemd, I'm not going to really explain what it is. We all know it is. It's the building block of our Linux and making the server do something useful for us. But do you know how much CPU PID1 is using? Do you know how much memory PID1 is using? Do you know how many open file descriptors PID1 has across your fleet? Why does this server over here have 600 and this one over here 60 when they do the same thing? They run a container and do some workload. And we have found boxes like this. When you upgraded systemd, has this changed? It shouldn't have, but we can identify regressions. This has made Dan very happy. For those who don't know, Dan Demure, contributor, works in at Meta. I will probably say Dan's name a few times. Then we can take it one step further and think about your overall user space health. How are you using Linux? Does this group of servers named X look like one another? Do these ones over here do what you expect? So comparing our servers that run our web workload for Facebook.com or Instagram.com are quite different to our big AI machines running accelerator workloads. So representing that at the systemd level lets us know that the boxes are sort of set up correctly. I can tell you how many service units we have, how many mount units we have, et cetera, across our fleet. And then the most important thing, we can now tell that if there's a failed unit, and it helps us identify, if a core unit has slipped under the radar and started failing, we can go and fix it at either provisioning time, during the box's runtime, et cetera, et cetera. And then my favorite, are all my NICs routable? Being a network guy, with all these back-end networks now, we can actually get alarms and see which back-end networks have somehow become unroutable with the status from NetworkD. So my home router has 654 units. That's my primary one. It runs a whole range of containers and overly engineered because I use it as a play box. I have 22 timer units and 7 managed interfaces. Useless numbers, but just showing I know that. Do you know that about your box? My backup router, surprisingly different. Even though I use Ansible to configure both of the boxes, it has vastly less units, vastly less timer units. I don't know why. And only 6 managed interfaces. It only has, it has 2 in it. I don't know why it has less interfaces, but it does. It has a 5G and a fiber connection, so I don't know. So we all know System D has a wealth of our metrics. There's a lot. So when I looked at them, I went and sort of hand-selected. I want to make that configurable one day of what makes most sense for most of our services, containers, etc. So memory usage, CPU time, and restarts, etc. I pull. But there's a wealth of much more information there that we could extend and use in the daemon that I pull. Right now, we're all pulling it via Dbus. I'm very excited to move to Varlink. Dan keeps telling me Leonard won't let him merge stuff. So if you could, Leonard, that would be great. My goal was really to have my Varlink ready for this talk, but I didn't get there. 2017, as I said, Davide Cavalca talked about early prototypes of doing exactly what MonitorD I'm going to talk about does. I just wanted to say that talk does exist if you want to go back to it, but we have made it, and we now have our whole fleet managed and quantified. Why do we want to quantify? I know we're all software engineers and sysadmins, and we know, but I challenge you to never accept just works. Even if System D hasn't caused you a problem, I guarantee if you start looking at these things, you're going to find weird edge cases in your fleet. I have some examples later on and how we use it and where it's really, really helped. Then I'm going to share the absolute key, which is what does good look like? A lot of people do not know what their good looks like, and having that baseline when anything does go bad is the best thing to have. So being the team that puts OSs on the box to know that they're all going out looking very similar is very helpful. So when other people go, these aren't working anymore, I can go, well, they left me the same, and here's the data to prove it. Where we usually fail is what systemd controls, and this is what I was most upset about when I joined the provisioning team. The server left provisioning and had high single-digit numbers of failed units. We found out a lot of them were timers trying to run when a directory doesn't exist yet, or Chef hadn't set something up, so that had created the state, which would never clear until that reruns, etc. So we had a lot of that. So we were faced with this kind of output when it would leave provisioning. You would have foo bar and log rotate was one that always surprised me that would be failed. And I was like, why? Why is this failed? And I went through and cleaned up a lot. And we now leave provisioning with 0 failed units, and it makes me, makes us again have that guarantee that we can say the box is ready to take a workload. So when I say imaging provisioning, it basically means putting, our OS is CentOS. I'll go into a little more detail about that, and it's a slight variation from CentOS. But I want to just guarantee, being the provisioning team, that I'm giving, the workload a box that will work for them. And that's making sure that our images got there successfully, System D has started everything, and our chef runs finish. An example that we commonly hit, some new bug comes out, we send thousands of boxes into prod because our imaging is pretty quick now, and we have to pull a handbrake on the system, work out what it is, and usually re-image those 1,000 boxes or put a hack in chef to clean it up in some way. And then we push the new image with the fix or chef diff that needs the fix, and we continue provisioning again. There are hundreds to thousands of jobs reprovisioning servers all around the world at any time at Meta. So when it breaks, we can eat into a lot of our capacity, and we don't want to do that. An example is from provisioning sometimes. We have a script to drop in it, systemd state when we go from our initrd into the rootfs. We have leaked things through there and caused the boot order to really, really be unhappy. Because System D thinks that it's already at a crazy late target, like network's already up, everything's already up, and things just all started at once. And we didn't really detect that one for a while, for a day or so. And all these boxes were in production, booting System D, not running this script because we'd upgraded some boxes to a new System D, clobbering our dropping of the state between the initrd System D and the rootfs. And we had all kinds of weird, wonderful errors. We were printing systemd analyzers and putting them on the wall and going, what is going on? So it was very hard to work out. And I didn't ever want to do it again, because I'm a lazy Australian. We don't like to work hard. So whatever I can do to not work hard again, I will do. All right. So system D usage at Meta. Let's go over where we use it and how we use it in 2024. Millions of servers. It is all CentOS based, but we use the hyperscale SIG versions of things. We have many contributors on staff, as we know. And we're running currently 255.5 fleet-wide. The 256, I think Dan started it this week magically, so I can claim we're rolling it out, but it hasn't really started yet, so I'm not gonna claim that we have. If you haven't heard of the CentOS Hypersales gig, it's a group we want you to come and join and help collaborate with, that just brings more modern things to CentOS. Newer system D, working with newer kernels, and we're a big ButterFS shop at Meta. So system D at Meta is in many different parts, and I'll go through some of them in a little more detail. We have two init RDs there. We'll talk about a disk init RD and an imaging init RD. The imaging init RD is what we boot into when we netboot to pull down like our rootfs, our disk init RD, our bootloader, etc., to put onto the system. Our main OS that we'll talk about is the rootfs. It's an image we build, another ButterFS sub-volume that we will drop and boot into. And then when I talk about Twine containers, or I'll probably say Tupperware because that's what it's called internally, but our Twine containers, for trademark reasons, are our containers that are also all systemd powered and start the service that way and becoming more and more systemd ecosystem containers. So our init RDs, it's where PID1 just basically drives that whatever that init R needs to do. As I said, the imaging init RD goes and fetches the packages. The disk init RD drops some config we need drop down before we switch root into the main rootfs and the main config files that we need to make systemd do what we want. Here, we don't really use monitored D or the monitoring that I'm talking about today. Here, we hard fail. And we push the error back up to our provisioning UI and we debug that way. And we have some of our systems automatically log the console so we can go and grab the console output and see what happens if it happens to be on the right hardware SKU where console logging's working that day. Not always working, but when it does, it's great. But usually I have to repro it, redo it, watch the console myself. Very slow on big AI hardware when there's so much damn hardware that the kernel enumeration of hardware itself takes 3 minutes. The rootfs, this is where I'll be focused today. So as I said, it's a ButterFS subvolume that we pull down and add in. We send streams around. This is our main sort of OS that does our workload on the majority of our fleet. We're IPv6 only hosts. As I said, are a full network D shop as well. So I believe we're probably one of the biggest network D shops in the world. So Twine, going over a little bit, PID1 and all our containers, is the systemd PID1. We're moving more and more there. This is a work in progress. We're not all there. Monitored D that I am going to talk about is not used there a lot yet, but we'll see if it makes sense in the future. Our Twine agent pulls a lot of stats and pushes that up to our monitoring system and has been around since the dawn of time. So it and host agent do the bulk of our container monitoring. So that rootfs that I talked about, building that, I just want to sort of slightly go over how we do build that. But basically we're a buck build system company, and we use a homegrown Antler 2 system that eventually just builds ButterFS send streams with all the files we want. So if you've never seen a buck target file, it's called, it's like a Starlark Python-like syntax where you define what you need, give me some RPMs, make a send stream. We put that up into our blob distribution system called FBPKG, and we pull it down and download. We are, as I said, a CentOS-based RPM distro, so our rootfs is pretty much CentOS. Much more modern CentOS, I'd like to call it. So looking at that in a diagram, we're nerds, so from left to right is sort of the flow. You'll see at the top, I sort of alleviate to our slow path of provisioning a box, and at the bottom I talk about our fast path. So I'll go through the slow path first, a normal sort of reboot the box, net boot, go into the imaging init RD, pull down all our images, boot our disk init RD, then we switch root into our rootfs, and then we reach workload.target. Workload.target is where sort of monitor D comes in and looks at system D and reports back to our systems on how everything is, and we aggregate that up and look at things at an aggregated value, because sending millions of keys isn't cheap, right? So We have to aggregate it. The fast path, the only main difference there is we have the ability to pre-download the new rootfs and kexec into it. It was very similar to what was explained by Seuss with the sub-volume usage for a new rootfs to boot into. So we basically do that into our disk init RD, then boot the rootfs and reach the same tree. On our normal workload server, it cuts off about 3 minutes. So every minute counts. Now I'm going to talk about how we upgrade systemd at Meta. We use a hyperscale SIG CI pipeline called system, Darn called systemd CD, where we take master, build it, pull it internally, and then I use that version in my image. And I boot, and I see if my init RDs work, and I see if my rootfs continues to work. The nice thing about this is when it doesn't work, we can open an issue while it's still top of mind because it's only recently been committed. And I can say to Darn, hey, it broke, what should we do? And that's what we've sort of been doing. Then from there, there's another side of how we roll systemd. On the boxes that are already out there with the old systemd, we slowly roll it out to the fleet. So if we're on 255, and like I said, Darn's starting to roll 260 now, where it would be is probably on some of our test tiers right now, seeing that have some test workloads to see that they don't die in any way or have difficulties. And then we slowly go 1%, 2%, 5%, and slowly roll it out over our infrastructure. And then Darn gets to play whack-a-mole on the bug fixes, which is not always fun for him. But we're thinking of maybe reversing that and getting more CI, or we're not sure yet, but changing systemd while the box has a workload, kind of risky. So we might look at other ways to do that and reduce that risk. We haven't really talked about it yet, but that's basically how we upgrade it. And having the metrics where we can see the changes between systemd version, memory usage, if the unit counts change somehow, there might be some new ones that have sprung up on by default, which have bit us. It's been handy to have those metrics when we roll it out. Some examples that this has found, when protect system equals true became a default in the init RD, we were dropping some files to user, probably a dumb thing to do anyway. So it was good, we cleaned it up, I moved those files to be dropped to run where they should be, and I was able to keep that feature on and we were ready for when we started rolling that new version. It's much nicer to debug this when I'm sitting at my desk enjoying my coffee, working it out, rather than 1,000 servers broken and provisioning not happening. So having that forethought and failing months before we start rolling it out is very nice. And then in our rootfs, we actually hit with some of the new TPMs units that have been added in, having issues because our TPMs were already locked, password protected, and the units were just crashing and dying because they couldn't do anything. I think this comes back to Jonathan's talk about how the server world and the desktop world and TPM usage vastly different. So let's go back into what my actual talk's about and talk about monitoring systemd once our systems are up. What I wanted to know was really PIDbun's resource usage, the unit types, and how we're actually using systemd, and I wanted to know the unit state. Is it good or is it bad? I'm a simple man, good, bad. So I went and looked around what existed, and there wasn't a whole lot. For those who have ever used Prometheus Node Exporter, I use it at home, I love it. It had a systemd extension, so I enabled that and wanted to see what I could get out of it. And then there was a Datadog offering. I've never used it. If anyone has, I'd love to know what it does, but I had to pay money to see that, and that that scared me away. So I made a Grafana dashboard of what the systemd extension for Node Exporter gave me, and it gave me very similar things to what I wanted, but not everything. So I got unit counts. They had some cool stuff about sockets accepted if you're using socket units, etc. I don't particularly use many, so as you can see, there's nothing on my home boxes. I want to point out that version, the version strings at the bottom, all my boxes are 255 except my lame NVR, so if anyone here works at Unify or Ubiquiti, please get me a newer systemd. I shouldn't have named a vendor. So that's sort of the information I found out there. So Node Exporter gave me the unit counts, the systemd version, but what it didn't give me, what I also wanted, was I wanted PID1 itself resource usages. I wanted the system state. If you've ever ran systemctl, is system running? It's a very helpful metric. And then I wanted some basic network D for our multi-NIC boxes. So I wrote monitor D. And I put there in brackets FB, because inside we have a slightly different version. And I'll go into detail of how it does differ inside. So at a diagram level, basically monitor D in the center there, the big green round square, talks to Procfs and Dbus to get most of its data. I do an evil thing, and I want to talk of this as evil, but I read run systemd netf links to get the state and all the links that networkd is caring about. I know it says, do not parse this, you're evil, blah, 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 but I do. So, because I couldn't find the data anywhere else. So what my plan was there was to work with Dan to get it into some Varlink APIs so that I could get that data out in a nicer way, so I don't break when you break that one day, because it's private. So there, dotted line to Varlink. I was hoping to have that done by this talk. We're still all Dbus. So looking forward to that. So I went and made what I like to call enumeration data sets. In Facebook, most of our monitoring to scale it is a very simple key and value. So an integer and a key and an entity to group those keys. So I wanted to just make enumeration representation of systemd, active state, load state, and then all the network states. And we send those integers up and then just use math to work out how the fleet is percentage wise, et cetera, et cetera. And I wanted to be really low on resources, and I think I pretty much achieved that apart from statically linked Rust binaries, but we'll talk about that. So it is all in Rust. Good joke. How do you know a Rust developer? Don't worry, they'll tell you. But it's all a binary basically parsing Dbus and turning it into JSON. Why JSON? The original way that I thought that I was going to deploy this was an agent at Facebook that wraps binaries, and it needs a certain form of JSON to send that off to key value pairs. I eventually changed that and ran it as a daemon, but I kept the JSON output for open source, so you can run it on your command line and get it. At Meta, we use it as a library, and when I get to talk about it in a bit, my MonitorD exporter also uses a library. I apologize whenever you go to the GitHub. This was my first ever Rust. I've tried to clean up as much as I can. There's still more to be cleaned up. So the binary is about 1.4 megabytes, statically linked and stripped. I wasn't too upset with that. Working at Meta, our binaries are vastly larger, so I thought that was pretty cool. But then I went, I wonder what systemd is, and I went, I kind of suck. I'm monitoring a system that does a hell of a lot more, and I'm 1.4 meg, but static binary. MonitorD is config-driven. All options in an INI format to make it familiar to what you're used to. I particularly am not an INI fan, but it works. And just some examples there of saying monitor cronny, grab its extra keys. If you want to monitor units or only monitor system state, this would all let you do less on an embedded system. If you only wanted to know if the system's good or not, you could only collect system state and you would save memory, etc. Don't support yes or no for bools. As always, PR welcome. So what's this sort of look like? If you go and run monitorD from the command line or from a checkout, you'll just get some output and a whole bunch of JSON. So there you can see that I have, on whatever box this was, I think it's my VPS in America, 169 service units. You can see that 3 is the system state. That's an enumeration int value. So we have running there, and you can see my version is 255.4. So my home is older than Facebook. That's pretty ironic, but it is. Awesome. FB monitorD that I talked about at Meta is basically running as a crate. We wrap it in a Thrift server. Everything at Meta is Thrift. Thrift, if you don't know what that is, it's just like a gRPC, RPC framework and IDL language. So I basically wrap it in that, which gives us a lot more APIs to do more stuff. So it sits there and runs across our fleet. There's some APIs that we call, so at provisioning, I thought that was very cool. I asked a lot of my pictures are Metamate generated, so that's apparently a lot of logs on a computer. Great work, Metamate. AI is killing it. I'm so glad we spent so much power on it. but it's cool. So I added some frist states because our provisioning workflow engine calls out to MonitorD after we finish all the provisioning, or we think we finished everything, and says, hey, is everything healthy? If not, I'm going to fail the job. So we have that guarantee that I said that says the box leaves provisioning in a healthy state that we want it to be in. And this has caught many subtle bugs and new services failing or a new version of one of our needed binaries not starting at boot time, etc. Another thing the internal system done that's extremely helpful, we have a system inside, and anyone that's ever worked at Facebook was the number one thing they miss when they leave called Scuba. It's a big JSON blob system we throw logs at, and then you can slice and dice. This gives me very nice metrics to say, what data center, what region, what host names, et cetera, are failing unit X. And I have that for both non-routable interfaces and failing system D units, and it's been extremely helpful. And I love seeing people use it in SEVs as outage reports for recovery metrics, etc. It makes me feel the work was worth it. Any Fedora users in the house? All right. Great news for you guys. You can DNF install it. So if you DNF install MonitorD or DNF install MonitorD exporter, minus my bug, they will both work out of the bat. You'll have to either symlink or hack to get the exporter working, because I used user local bin on my home installs, and on Fedora we install it in user bin. My bad. So nice, easy install. It's there. You can start seeing stats. You could write something to wrap it to push to your metrics aggregation system of choice, and away you go. MonitorD exporter, as I said, also just uses it as a library. It's open telemetry, so it's Prometheus exporter compliant. Prometheus pulls that, and you can get a nice Grafana dashboard. So what does that look like? If you do sudo dnf install, you have to do that hack in the yellow at the bottom, but let's ignore that. We'll fix that eventually. You can then curl and get that same MonitorD system state now in the format that OpenTelemetry wants. And another example showing, you know, interface names in that format again. I said I wanted to try and keep it tight on resources, so on my small VPS in the US, you can see that it's been running for about a week. We have about 8 tasks, so I guess 8 file descriptors and threads. You can see the peak memory is about 3.1 megabytes. I'm sitting at 1.8 megabytes, so I want it to be light footprint, so it's pretty light footprint to get base metrics. These servers aren't pulling the full gamut of stats of like per server statistics. My config's very boring here, but as you can see, not heavy, and gives you a nice insight to how your system's running. I have made and uploaded, if you are a Grafana user, a dashboard, so if you do install this and get it into Prometheus, there is a dashboard ready for you to go. That's apparently what my dashboard looks like according to Metamate. Looks very nice there, I must say. Actually looks better than my real one, but here's my real one that's much more boring but actually means stuff. You can see all the different types of systemd units, active, inactive, failed. You can see the green love heart up there. That means that I don't have an alarm right now, but if any unit does fail, my phone will buzz. Let's hope I don't get one now. It's on silent anyway. But mount units, mast units, socket units, all the kind of stuff to see how your system's used. We're all nerds, we love graphs, graphs are cool. Then I have the network D sort of stats further down on the dashboard. You can see there how many interfaces are managed by network D. On my VPSs, you'll see there's a lot less. That's because wherever I host that one, they don't use network D, but I do for my WireGuard VPN, and then my other two home routers that I alluded to earlier. I look at the admin state, carrier state, opper state, and then the address state. I only care about V6, but I monitor both. And then my favorite one that allowed us to get the boot to be much more quicker at Meta that we were abusing for a long time, the wait for online, and tuning wait for online to only wait for the right interfaces that we actually care about to be up at boot time. So we got that right on our multi-NIC AI cluster, and that saved, you know, 30 plus seconds of sitting there waiting for the back-end NICs to come up. I don't care to provision the server, I only need the primary NIC, and they usually come up during the provisioning. I'll say usually. Then the PID1 stats itself, like even in my home small network, like it's very strange. Like why does my, on the very far top right, why does my Australian VPS that does pretty much everything my American VPS does, why does it use so much less memory? You know, 10 megabytes versus 14. I don't know, I haven't looked into it, but it does. And so you can see there's various things there, and all I'm using there is ProcFS and looking at things. So happy to add other meaningful things. I asked Dan what would help him, when we roll new systemd versions, and that's sort of what I came up with. And at the very bottom there, we have the running state. So all my boxes are 3, healthy, no failed units. I'm a great sysadmin, go me. Home success story. I pulled out an old UPS that died, it died, and I forgot I had a very evil watchdog unit that would restart that service every now and then, because we all know how reliable things connected by USB are. It would just randomly stop responding. It was also a very cheap UPS, but it just stopped dying, so I had a watchdog unit that would just restart it, and you can see there on the graph it kept doing it, and I'm like, what's going on here? So I stopped it, disabled it, and I did that twice, as you can see in the graph, because I forgot about the watchdog unit. And then I eventually, you know, just had to do the right thing and kill my, oh, I named a vendor again, damn it. But yeah, I killed the UPS watchdog and all was good and my boxes stayed happy again. Had I had this, I probably would have forgot there and just left it alone. So just a recount, system D just works. I never accept that. As a lot of my coworkers know, I'm kind of annoying, but I never accept anything just works. If it does just work, I want data to tell me that it just works. Know what good is in your environment. That's always a goal of any service you do. I'm very disappointed when I meet service owners who don't know what good looks like when we're in an outage. That's always a follow-up I'll attach to that outage sort of report. So this helps us. I don't ever want to be a hypocrite, so this area was vastly unquantified, so I quantified it. It also has been helpful to see the differences between system D versions. Again, having numbers on things allows you to know when things go bad. And alarm it. Humans aren't going to look at this data, so get some alarms in there on high-hitting, you know, good signal alarms, and you can be lazier, and I like being lazier. There's a lot of things I'd like to add. I'd love some PRs. I want to move to Varlink or ZBus. The only reason I didn't go to ZBus originally is because I was new to Rust. Async and traits scared me. I now kind of understand them. No one truly understands them, but I'm going to look to, if I'm not getting my Varlink APIs anytime soon, I will probably move to ZBus and do that work and see. And I want to A-B compare my synchronous Rust versus the async and see who's cheaper. If it turns out the async's more overhead and costs me more CPU order, I'd probably get rid of it. I want to see some cool things, like I'd love to see boot time statistics and shutdown. I'd love to see if we could dump some state about units that hold up the shutdown. Again, why we do profile switches at real time at Meta, so like when a job comes along and I'm job X, I need some host level stuff changed, and sometimes that is some syscatools or a kernel version we have to reboot, or kexec. I'd like to see what slows us down doing that. Again, the quicker it is, the quicker we get the workload on there, the more money we make, and the more bonus I get. So very important. Journal Z statistics, I'd love to see error rates. You know, I'd love to see all boxes in the same sort of characteristic role, that the error log rate is zero. It's never going to be, but at least the same. Because if you could see a box that has 5,000 error level logs or emergency, and the rest don't, probably something worth looking into. And it goes on and on. I'd love to support the system D and spawn natively from the one instance and send all the keys from the one monitor D so we don't have to run it everywhere. And I'd love to hear your ideas. Open issues, I mightn't get to them, but I'll try. Thanks.
Questions?
Yeah, also, if you like Linux and provisioning and all that, we have an open position in my team, so come and talk to me.
Excellent. Questions? I have a question. Do you export cgroup metrics on IO CPU memory?
I do not. I'd be interested in doing so.
Yeah, okay.
We do. We already had it in another daemon at Meta, and we do it, so I didn't double up, but we should probably move that into this.
That would be nice. That's one of the main things, new things that we are starting to monitor at Azure, the cgroup memory.
Yep. If you can give me example code to copy and whatnot, even better.
Questions? Any question?
I mean, it's not so much a question. I like this a lot. But I was thinking about, like, I kind of sense we should turn this around so that instead of you asking all this data from system...
Should push to me.
Well, no. So... You know, in the TPM context, I was like I mentioned.
He got TPN into my talk.
Yeah, I did.
He did it, ladies and gentlemen.
So I was thinking, like, I have the quote stuff and things like this. So I was always like, back when I thought about that, I want to get information about the runtime state of the OS into these assigned reports about the system. So I was thinking about that, so basically I want all kind of information included in a signed report that you can then analyze somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So the way I was thinking about how we could implement that in that system report binary, which is mostly about TPM, but could probably just not do TPM, yeah. But that there would be a directory in slash run where any component on the system can just bind a socket into and would implement the same wireling interface. And then system to report would just connect to every single one of them in parallel, basically, and ask them, please give me the report of whatever you have right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would implement that in JournalD, we would implement that in NetworkD, we would implement it in everything else we have.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just basically provide the data for free, right? Like, so...
Because it's already there, right? And ready to
Yeah, just and then they natively handle all of this, so it would just be an additional way to get the stuff. But basically, yeah, you would basically have the directory, you can either talk to the services directly and get the individual stuff, or you use system report, we will just blow out methods to calls to all of them at the same time and then return your combined JSON stuff. And then if you do the TPM stuff, we'll also sign it for you and do remote attestation.
Yeah, this could just...
Like we talked about MetricsD, but that's a different thing. Because the stuff we talked about then is about time series data, right? Like, and this one is not so much, right? Like, this is about getting a report.
This is all time
about
series,
which,
too.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think we should do something like this. And then basically,
happy to talk.
You get all our data for free, and then but this would be open the directory for anybody to bind whatever they want, and there would be even delegation model, right? Like that you can gonna have an end spawn container that binds something there that gets the data from its payload and things like this. So you get basically recursive dump of everything on the system in all the detail you want, because you could configure the in real service to report as little or
filter and
as much as you want, and then this could be the agent that everybody calls. I mean, this was just the model that I was going for.
I'm
a fan of agents, you know? Like, all these supervision things, I always install the little agents, try to pull everything out. It's very inefficient, and particularly in DBus. Way, we turn it all around, because we just give you a ready-made report.
And this would just turn into a proxy at Meta, where I'd probably have to expose it by Thrift still, but that's all it would do. And I'm very excited with Vilink using the IDL with Thrift IDL to magically make it just convert.
Other comments or questions?
I thought I'd get grilled, so this is good.
Mm-hmm. How much time do you have? 2 minutes. Going once. Going twice. Well, thank you.
All right.